This is Pat, and I'm reading from the Clinton Journal for Friday, October the 31st. Happy Halloween to all. And from the front page, Farmer City resident urges county to block solar project, by Gordon Woods of the Clinton Journal. Opposition to the proposed Santa Ana Solar Energy Project is building as Farmer City area residents work to enlist county officials against the plan. Farmer City resident Mo Winstead addressed the county board on October the 23rd. "I'm from Farmer City. I've never lived anywhere but DeWitt County," Winstead said. "I'm here in opposition to the Santa Ana Solar Farm." Winstead provided board members with a map depicting his property in relationship to the proposed solar facility. "You see this dot right here? That's our property, and this box around us is the proposed solar farm. I don't know how you guys would like it," Winstead told the board members. Winstead built a new house 2 years ago and less than 2 years later was notified about the solar project. "The gentleman who bought this section of field bought it to do so," Winstead said. "He was bragging about how much money he was going to make off of it." Winstead said since the project was announced, there had been frequent drone activity over his property and people associated with the project trespassing through his yard. Winstead asked who would be liable if a storm sends some of the solar panels into buildings on his property. "And what's it going to do to our property values?" he asked. "If we were surrounded by panels on three sides, who's going to want it if we decide to sell? Our taxes went from $2,400 to almost $9,000 last year." Winstead pointed out that the Farmer City Council voted twice to not support the project and also sent the county a letter urging it to get involved. "Please do what your representative to do for this county," Winstead told county board members. "People who are pushing this down our throats are not even from our county, and the governor is from Chicago. He couldn't point out Clinton, Farmer City, or anywhere else out on a map." Winstead, he felt it was up to the board to protect county residents. "You represent us, not those guys," he said. "Stopping the project could prove difficult. Illinois statute limits the power of municipalities to block commercial solar and wind energy projects. Legislation enacted in January of 2023 prohibits municipalities from banning or establishing moratoriums on commercial solar and wind projects. The statute preempts local zoning standards and ordinances. County board members have been split with respect to following the statute or violating it and risking a lawsuit." And this story, also from the front page. Fire destroys Adams Street home. CFD responds to second fire. Clinton firefighters were busy with one structure fire Monday afternoon when a second one broke out. Clinton Fire, along with multiple area departments, responded at just after 3 p.m. on Monday to 816 East Adams Street for a report of a fire in the attached garage of a home. Responders found the home with heavy fire conditions, according to the department's Facebook post. Occupants of the house escaped, but a family dog remained inside. Firefighters located the dog, which died from smoke inhalation. A second alarm was issued for additional manpower. Clinton Fire reported the house sustained severe damage and was rendered uninhabitable. One firefighter was transported to the hospital with chest pain. While at the Adams Street fire, the firefighters were dispatched to a second building fire at 400 South Clinton Street. A group of firefighters left the Adams Street fire to respond to the second fire. A third alarm was issued for additional help. At the Clinton Street location, firefighters found a detached garage emitting a heavy amount of black smoke. Inside, they discovered a car on fire. The fires are not believed to be suspicious, but are under investigation by the State Fire Marshal's Office. Departments responding to Monday's fires were the Wapala Fire Department, Maroa Fire Department, Waynesville Fire Department, Weldon Fire Department, Randolph Township Fire Department, Farmer City Fire Department, Hickory Point Fire Department, Argenta Oriana Fire Department, Mount Pulaski Fire Department, DeWitt County EMA, and Clinton Police. And now from the op-ed page, an editorial by Richard Koritz, On Point, Joy or Angst. New York City voters will elect a new mayor next week. It's rare when a mayoral race is on the national news on a daily basis, but that city is New York. Many, with good cause, view New York as the financial capital of the country. New York is the home of Wall Street and much of the banking industry. Capitalism is king, at least until the election on Tuesday. After that, who knows? New York is among the bluest of blue states. Democrats outnumber Republicans by something like 8-1. The comment that Republicans are viewed as an endangered species is very close to the truth. Democrats dominate, but the Democrats are having a difficult time defining what is a Democrat. The Democratic primary gave an overwhelming endorsement of Zohran Mamdani as the party's candidate. Former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo failed miserably in the primary. Traditional wisdom would say the show is over and Mamdani will have a cakewalk over Republican Curtis Sylwa. But this is New York and everything is subject to revision. Traditional Democrats soon realize that Mamdani is, by his own admission, a democratic socialist. Mamdani is Muslim with a large Muslim contingency in New York. New York has the largest concentration of Jews anywhere outside of Israel. Mamdani has made several remarks that are viewed as anti-Semitic. This naturally creates tension in the Jewish community. Then Mamdani voices his desire to redistribute wealth with free daycare and bus rides for all. Add to this that housing should be viewed as a legal right and that the government will pay for all of this. Mamdani's rhetoric concerns the mainstream Democrats, but is music to the ears of his youthful and progressive supporters. Defeated Andrew Cuomo seized the angst in New York and decided to become an independent. This is the same Cuomo who, as governor of New York, was literally run out of office due to failed nursing home management and sexual allegations. New Yorkers do not like Cuomo, but Mamdani has many worried. Mamdani currently is polling at 44% of the projected vote to Cuomo's 34%. This is a 10-point advantage for Mamdani, which is very significant in political races. However, Mamdani had a 20-point advantage only weeks ago. The race is tightening. Republican Sylwa has an 11-point of the projected vote. Only about half of the registered voters actually vote in New York. Mamdani's youth vote is energized and going to the polls in early voting. Cuomo appears to be appealing to the boomers out there who haven't always voted. Silva's 11% could have an impact if he were to withdraw, but Sylwa has pledged to stay in the race. Mamdani is an avowed socialist who promised to give New Yorkers a lot of free benefits, but he has yet to say how he will pay for all of the giveaways beyond taxing the rich, who will simply leave the city if he's elected. Cuomo is the disgraced former governor who has decided ethics and morals problems. The voters in New York have clearly shown their disdain for him by their vote in the primary. Mamdani is pure populist politics, and Cuomo is the old boy crony politics. Sylwa simply does not have the numbers to win unless an unheard of miracle would to happen. The betting partners have the race as Mamdani. I see no joy for the voters in New York and a lot of angst for years to come, regardless of the outcome of this election. This New York race reminds me of why I like living in DeWitt County. Country living and country values are something that we all need to treasure. Richard Koritz is an Illinois native attorney and former DeWitt County state's attorney. And this story from Andrew Adams of Capital News, Illinois. Natural gas rate increases likely for Ameren and Nicor customers next year. Springfield. Customers across Illinois could face increased natural gas rates next year, based on proposed decisions in two proceedings before the Illinois Commerce Commission. The regulatory agency which oversees gas utilities is considering two requests from Nicor Gas and Ameren Illinois. A five-member panel of commissioners appointed by Governor J.B. Pritzker will make the final decision in the cases in November. But administrative judges overseeing the cases have released proposed decisions which suggest cutting Nicor and Ameren's request by about one-third. Nicor, which delivers natural gas to 2.3 million customers in northern and western Illinois, asked for a $314 million rate increase in January, equivalent to about $91.50 per year, or a 9.21% increase for residential customers, according to the company. Ameren, which has 800,000 customers throughout downstate Illinois, asked for a $129 million increase in January, or about $100 per year, or about a 13% increase for residential customers, according to the Citizens Utility Board, a consumer watchdog group. The proposed decision cut Nicor's request by $109.8 million and Ameren's by about $43.7 million, according to the Citizens Utility Board. Ameren officials said the cuts bring the increase down to $5.80 per month, or about $70 per year for the typical customer. Nicor officials said the increase under the order would be about 5% to 6%. Even with the proposed increase, our distribution rates remain among the lowest of any major national natural gas utility in Illinois, and the total bill for an average residential customer under proposed rates continues to remain in line with the Consumer Price Index, Nicor spokesperson Jennifer Goles said in a statement. Brad Kleppel, Ameren's senior director of gas operations, defended his company's request for higher rates by saying the majority of the increased revenue will go towards safety upgrades and compliance with federally required safety testing. 50% of the pipes on our system are over 50 years old, Kleppel said. We have to design, operate, maintain our system to provide gas service on the coldest hour of the coldest day. Ameren's rate case also includes pilot programs that could swap gas service in some areas for electric service and for an incentive program for renewable natural gas, a method of capturing methane from landfills and other sources that would otherwise be released as a pollutant. Despite proponents' claim that it can help reduce greenhouse emissions, some environmentalists criticize that technology for still releasing some pollutants. Advocates want more cuts. The gas cases have attracted significant attention from consumer advocacy groups who say the requests go too far and represent a trend of increasingly frequent rate hikes. This is part of a troubling trend being repeated where large rate hikes are becoming the norm and consumers simply cannot keep paying the price, Jeff Scott, AARP Senior Associate State Director, said in a statement. Nicor asked regulators for a bump from about 9.51% to 10.35%. Ameren's ask was similar, 9.44% to 10.7%. Most of the reductions recommended by the administrative law judges stemmed from lowering both countries' return on equity figures to 9.93%. Most of the overall reduction to both rate increases comes from the lower profit rates, with reductions also stemming from cuts to things like post-employment benefits. The companies always claimed this is about maintenance, but at the same time, they're asking for an outrageous profit rate for their stakeholders, Citizens Utility Board spokesman Jim Chilson said. That exposes their true motivation for their rate hike requests. Abe Scar, director of the consumer advocacy group Illinois PRRG, said there really is a lot more work for the commission to do beyond the cuts to profit rates. He said the commission's decision is tied up in the uncertain future of gas utilities in the state. Regardless of the future and exactly the pathway, there are going to be fewer customers on the gas system using less gas, Scar said. If the utilities keep spending the way they're doing, it's going to make rates even more unaffordable for more people. The Illinois Commerce Commission is weighing that question in a years-long future of gas proceeding in which advocates, utilities, and businesses are advising regulators what the natural gas industry will look like as the state approaches its deadlines for reducing greenhouse emissions. In the meantime, the deadline for the commission to act is November the 24th for the NECOR case and December the 1st in the Ameren case. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. And now to some sports. Lady Maroons over Lady Bombers in two sets by Mark Rogers of the Clinton Journal. The Clinton High School Lady Maroons volleyball team finally gelled into a force to be reckoned with. After an 8-18 start to the season, the Lady Maroons have advanced to a 13-19 record. On this evening, about a week ago, they faced a very dangerous Argenta Orianna Lady Bomber team. The first set of the match started evenly matched, with neither team getting an advantage. With the home team down by 1 point, 8-9, the Lady Maroons went on a tear, scoring 7 straight points. This gave the Lady Maroons a comfortable lead for a time. The set then returned to the give-and-take routine, with AO chipping away a little at a time into the Clinton lead. However, it was not enough, as the Lady Maroons took the first set 25-21. The second set was a more closely contested matchup, as neither team would succumb to the other's rally attempts. Both teams had 4-point runs that canceled each other out until midway through the set, when Clinton managed a second run that gave them a small lead. Then, near the end of the set, there was another burst from the Lady Maroons that finalized a 25-20 win. This gave the Lady Maroons their 14th win of the season. Also of note on the night, the freshman team split sets with the Lady Bombers, who were playing their junior varsity team because they had no freshman team. The junior varsity team struggled a little harder, taking 3 sets to down the opposing Lady Bombers. And now on to the Lady Maroons over Lady Lions on Senior Night by Mark Rogers of the Clinton Journal. The Clinton High School Lady Maroons volleyball team had a lot riding on this evening's match against the Lady Lions of Springfield Lamphere High School. It was the final match of the regular season. It was Senior Night, and it would be the team's first 15-win season in a decade. The evening started well, with both freshman and junior varsity teams winning it big in 2 sets each. Then came the great test. Could the varsity pull off a triad win? The final match of the season, senior night, and a 15th match of the season? The first set began well for the home team. They had runs of 4 points and 6 points to grab the early lead. The Lady Lions stayed with the Lady Maroons through the first 4-point run, but got stuck at 0.9 and faltered. The home team took the first set 25-9 in blazing fashion. The match seemed secure. But the opposition was not willing to give up so easily. The second set began with the Lady Lions running off 4 straight points to the home team's 1. From there, the match was evenly spread with neither team getting a break. Then, at mid-set, the Lady Maroons rebounded with a 5-point blast that gave them some breathing room. The opposition still didn't give up, pushing the Lady Maroons to the end of the set. The Lady Maroons finally pulled out a 25-20 win for a great ending of the season, senior night, and for the fans gathered for the event. The coaches enjoyed a season of 15 wins. The Lady Maroons celebrated with the seniors, and the rest just watched with joy and relief. And now for some wedding news. Peacock Lane wed. From Clinton, Ryan Peacock and Bree Lane were married on Friday, October 17th at Dishel Barrel Room in Normal, with the bride's sister, Victoria Price, officiating. The ceremony was attended by close friends and family, and this submission includes a picture of the lovely couple. DSB donates to Vault. DeWitt Savings Bank recently donated to the Vault Teen and Community Center. The donation will help support student programs at the center. Eastern Illinois Food Bank Food Mobile Distribution in DeWitt County. Tuesday, November the 4th, from 10 to 11 a.m. at the Waynesville Christian Church, 105 South 4th Street in Waynesville. The Eastern Illinois Food Bank is distributing food to local families facing food insecurity. The Food Mobile will visit DeWitt County on November the 4th to provide free groceries. Updates regarding future food distributions can be found at the Food Bank's website at www.eifoodbank.org or contacting Sophie Ellis, Eastern Illinois Food Bank, at phone number 217-328-3663. That's 217-328-3663. In obituaries, we have Rosemary Ellen Brady Craven. Rosemary Ellen Brady Craven passed away on October the 23rd, 2025, at Warner Health Service in Clinton. She was preceded in death by her husband, Tim Craven, on December the 13th, 2019, and her parents. Services were held at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, October the 29th, 2025, at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. For a second obituary, Larry Wayne Blade Razor. Larry Wayne Blade Razor, 69, of Clinton, passed away on October the 23rd, 2025, with his loving family by his side. He was born on May 8th, 1956, in Clinton. Graveside services will be conducted on Saturday, November the 1st, 2025, at 1 p.m. at Woodlawn Cemetery, 9412 Cromwell Drive in Clinton. A celebration of life will be held at the Clinton Eagles after the service. In law enforcement news, the Clinton Fire Police Department. Citations, 10-20-25. Kelsey Hall, 33, of Clinton, was issued a citation for disobeying a stop sign. 10-26-25, Brandon Henley, 44, of Clinton, was issued a citation for operating an uninsured vehicle. Henley was issued a notice to appear. 10-26-25, Emily Fuque, 37, Country Club Hills, was issued a citation for speed. Arrests. 10-24-25, Joseph Tuhill, 42, of Clinton, was charged with violation of a civil no-contact order. Tuhill was transported to the DeWitt County Jail and released to corrections. 10-25-25, Zachary Wharton, 27, of Clinton, was charged with criminal trespass to motor vehicle, burglary motor vehicle, and aggravated resisting or obstructing a peace officer. Wharton was transported to the DeWitt County Jail and released to corrections. DeWitt County Sheriff's Office, October the 17th through the 24th. Investigation into the scene of an accident which occurred at 11:17 a.m. on 10/18/25 revealed that Richard Simons, 66, Lincoln, was traveling eastbound on State Highway 10, west of U.S. Highway 48. Ryan Sossamon, 48, of Clinton, was stopped, facing north on U.S. Highway 48 at the four-way stop at the intersection with State Highway 10. Sossamon began to enter the intersection traveling north when Simons went through the intersection without stopping at the stop sign. Simons said he was looking to his right, outside of the vehicle, and did not see the stop sign. Simons says he saw Sossamon in the intersection and attempted to avoid hitting them, but could not avoid the collision. The front passenger side of Simons hit the front driver's side of Sossamon. Simons sustained damage to the front passenger side quarter panel, front passenger side bumper, and the hood. Sossamon sustained damage to the right driver's side quarter panel, front bumper, grille, and hood. Both vehicles were towed to the scene by Baum's Towing. Simons was issued a citation for failure to reduce speed or an accident. Simons was released with no required court appearance. Eugene Scray, 67, of Leroy, was issued a citation for speeding 80 miles per hour in a 55 mile per hour zone. Scray was released with no required court appearance. Esby Sanchez Gallegos, 31, of Streeter, was arrested and charged and issued a citation for driving while license suspended or revoked. Sanjay Gallegos was released with required court appearance. All suspects are presumed innocent until found guilty in a court of law. The Weldon Springs Foundation held its annual Halloween Spooktacular on Saturday, October the 25th. More than 140 people attended the event. There are several accompanying pictures with this showing the kids on hay wagons in their skeleton outfits, dressed as chickens, clowns, princesses, and many other beautiful costumes. Along with their parents, it looked like it was a very successful event. In other Halloween news, Halloween vibes at Vault After Hours. After Hours at the Vault on Monday was full of Halloween vibes and friendly competition. Some of the students made pieces for homemade costumes while others played gaga ball. And an accompanying picture shows some of the teens at sewing machines, sewing on costumes. The 1887 law that powers modern agricultural science from Champaign. Agricultural innovation requires more than ideas. It demands acres of land, barns full of livestock, fleets of equipment, and teams of specialists who keep it all running. Few research enterprises are as complex, costly, or foundational as agriculture. For nearly 140 years, the Hatch Act of 1887 has helped shoulder that burden, providing stable federal funding that fuels discovery across the colleges of agriculture, consumer, and environmental sciences at the University of Illinois in Champaign. Specifically, the Hatch Act provided for the establishment of agricultural experiment stations at the nation's land-grant universities, where scientists studied and recommended new practices to address farming challenges of the day. But because the statute prioritized and promised continuing funding, Hatch Acts will soon empower College of ACES researchers to develop solutions for farmers, their families, rural communities, and beyond.